This is Home Tech, show number 105, recorded on January 31st, 2013. Here on Home Tech, we cover all your favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation all for the Average Tech Guy. I'm your host, Jim Collison, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a snowy and super cold Bellevue, Nebraska, and we post the show with world-class show notes each week out at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you have questions, concerns, or comments, even some contributions, you can contact the show. Just send me an email, podcast@TheAverageGuy.tv. Find me on Twitter. I am just Jay Collison, or you can follow the show schedule each week at TheAverageGuy.tv. If you're new to listening to podcasts and you're looking for a way to listen each week, you might want to try consider using Stitcher. We've been talking about it for the last month or so. It's available for both Android and iPhone platforms. A great way to listen to your podcast, both at home and on the road. It is audio only, but of course, the show and all the past shows are on Stitcher. Stitcher.com. Search Home Tech. It's education for your ears. We also have a link to it out on TheAverageGuy.tv. Just look for the Stitcher icon. And now, Home Tech, Financial Tech, and Rich's Random Podcast, which are all back in production at this point. If you've walked away from any of those podcasts, we are producing those. In fact, we're going to record a Financial Tech right after the show tonight. I've got Andrew Hunt all lined up to do that. If you want to stay around and watch that, you might just want to do that. Andrew and I will do a quick 15-minute Financial Tech right after this show is over. You can also view and subscribe to this show on YouTube. I've been getting some comments, some folks wanting the video feed, and I'm still going to maybe do that, so we'll see. For right now, head out to youtube.com/theaverageguy, or catch this show each week, and most of you that are listening right now, in fact, all of you who are listening right now, have caught it live, 8 p.m. Central over at theaverageguy.tv live. And don't forget, we have both groups on Facebook. That's just facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy. And a new one on Google Plus. Search for The Average Guy Podcast. And don't forget to visit theaverageguy.tv/Amazon. When purchasing from Amazon, we roll all that back into giveaways. In fact, thank you. If you bought from Amazon in December, we had a big month in December, and those will pay out 1st of March. And we've got some giveaway stuff coming up. You can also join us for a live chat during the show. If you've come in from YouTube, come over to theaverageguy.tv, look right below you on this window, and there's chat. You don't need an account. Just sign in, and you can get started. A bunch of guys out there in chat tonight. Guys, welcome. We got a great show ahead for you. All right, I got a bunch of announcements. I'm just going to plow through these real quick because I want to get them out to you. I know if I put them in the end, you won't listen to them. I mentioned earlier we've got a big giveaway coming up on December 15th. That'll be through from December 15th to the end of the month, about $500 worth of giveaways. So stay tuned for those. We're going to actually do that in conjunction with JPEG to RAW, Mike Howard's podcast. And we're going to do a special giveaway. So watch the site. We've got about 15 days or about 2 weeks. And that's coming up. Stay tuned. You'll want to be a part of that. I just kicked off a new series called Home Tech Interview. And if you haven't caught it yet, I actually just put it in the feed. So it's going to be right behind this podcast. We did an interview with Ray Ortega. He is a podcast consultant, and we talked about podcasting. So if you're thinking about starting a podcast, I don't know why anybody would want to, but if you were thinking about starting a podcast or you just want to know how to do your podcast better, as Andrew gives me the cut it, go back one episode, Ray Ortega. It was a great interview. He gave me a lot of time, about an hour's worth. You will want to listen to that as well. And then a quick shout out to Greg Gerke. I think that's G-E-R-K-E. He actually tracked me down at the Omaha Drobo Average Guy Hangout that we did on Wednesday night. I guess it was just last night. Mario Blandini is here in town. And he and I and Greg and some staff from the Drobo headquarters showed up, and we got a chance to talk about Drobos and such, and Drobo has a new announcement of some things that are coming up, and they're not hardware related. Okay, so just, it's a surprise. I can't really tell you. Speaking of surprises, there's one for Andrew. An early podcaster is in the making right now. But Greg, appreciate you coming out last night for the meetup here in Omaha. For the next 2 weeks, no home tech podcasts. You guys have the weeks off, so Christian and Andrew, you guys can enjoy a little bit of break. The podcast won't stop. I've got an interview with Brian Burgess lined up to fill in for next week. It'll just come in the feed like this show normally would. So next weekend and the weekend after that, an interview with Mike Howard and Chris Barnes as we talk about kind of the future of podcasting. And there was some CES talk in there, and we talk a little bit about TVs. It was such a good interview, and many of you didn't get a chance to hear it. I'm going to replay it again. The show, it won't be live. It's just going to show up in the feed. So take 2 weeks off, guys. Don't come out here. Do something different. Get some sunlight, all those things. We'll be off for the next 2 weeks, but the feed will continue. And I'll be actually in Southern California next week, so Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, if you're in the Southern California area, primarily around downtown L.A. I'll be at USC and UCLA on Wednesday and Thursday, and might have a few minutes in the evening if you're around those areas. So if you are and you want to join me in a quick meetup, maybe we can find some place to grab a bite to eat or a drink. Send me an email, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. That's next Wednesday. Let's see, what are those dates? Those are February 6th and 7th. So if you're listening to this in 2014, it's long gone. But February 6th and 7th, I'll be in the L.A. area, USC, UCLA, on those campuses. Let me know, and maybe we can get together. And then one more shout-out to @thejason on Twitter. He tweeted me from the Netherlands. I mentioned I'm going to be in Germany March 20th through the 28th. And he said, hey, let's get together for a meetup. Well, where he's at and where I'm at, about 500 kilometers. So I'm not expecting him to make it. But if you are in the Frankfurt, Germany area and you're listening to this podcast, I'm sure that we have tons of people in Frankfurt, Germany listening to the podcast. But if you are, let me know, podcast@theaverageguy.tv. Maybe we can get together for a beer. That would be great, and I would love doing it. All right, let's quick get the guys introduced, and then we will dig into some tech. I'm excited. We got some good stuff tonight. Of course, all the way over to my left, and he has one of the newest members of his household with him. And how's that going so far, Andrew Morris? How are you doing?
Yeah, it's going pretty well. I'm going to have to use the mute button very judiciously during the show today because he's bit ratty at the moment.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see them. They're doing well, I assume, and growing quickly.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Very good. Well, Andrew, welcome to the show. And then, of course, back and looking actually awake this week. The homework must not be too bad. Christian Johnson. Christian, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing. The homework is still sort of weird and strange, but I'm doing good. Life is life, and work is work, and play is play. So that's about it.
Well, good. Well, welcome back, and we got some good stuff for you tonight, so thanks for coming out. And, of course, in his rotation as a guest host and back on the show for some more punishment, Kevin Schoonover. Kevin, you're like this. You were the CES guru, man. You knew more about what was going on with those laptops than those guys who are supposed to know. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me back. I had a good time down there.
Yeah, thanks for doing that. That was fabulous. You did a great job on the floor with Dave. And if folks wonder what I'm talking about, go out to youtube.com/homeservershow and go down through the CES coverage. And I think we were in the Samsung booth or the Intel booth.
It was the Intel booth. Yeah, it was the Intel booth. We were wandering around there.
So Kevin got a chance to join us in there and walked through some of the laptops that were there, and he was schooling the reps. So some good coverage from CES as well. Kevin, welcome to the show. Okay, well, a couple things. Usually I take all my items and I go last, but I want to dig right in because for a change I got some really good stuff. So many of you know on the show I've been having trouble with my internet connection dropping. Hasn't done it a lot during this show, but during home server show, just for whatever reason, kids would be surfing, I would be surfing, we'd be doing the show, plop, down the internet would go, and of course that would cause havoc and major edits for the show and such like that. And so I began replacing everything from the switches up. So a couple months ago, I replaced all my switches and went gigabit on everything. A month right after that, I replaced my wireless router with a D-Link DIR655, which I got. I think, Kevin, that may have been a refurb link that you put in the Average Guy group. That was a refurb deal over at Newegg, and it was a great deal. It's a great deal. So I replaced that. Thing still dropping off. And so finally last weekend, I went out to Best Buy and picked up a new Motorola. Let's see, it's a Motorola SB6141 DOCSIS 3.0 cable modem. And it's just, you know, your run-of-the-mill, $100 kind of deal. Had a $25 gift card, so I threw that in there. And I picked up the cable modem and put that in and had called Cox and had them install it. You know, they got to do some wizardry on their end and make it work. And then started doing some download speeds, you know, some speed checks. And, oh, my God, I could not believe the difference. And I had an old Cisco. No, an old, what's the blue ones? The blue with the black front. Is that Cisco?
Linksys.
Linksys. Yeah, I had an old Linksys, DOCSIS 2 that I've had for about 5 or 6 years. And it did great, a little workhorse. It was fine. And I was getting about, let's say, 15 or 20 down and just maybe 5 up in that. And when I replaced this out, and I was a little skeptical because I thought, you know what, I only pay for, right now, I only pay for 20 and 3. That's all I pay for. And so I thought certainly a new modem would not make a difference. And guys, Mike Howard will attest, we were rocking almost 30 down and a solid 15 to 20 up on this modem. And I don't know if that's trickery or if I'm actually getting that, but consistent speed tests have shown just way faster speeds than I would expect. Is that real? Am I really getting that up and down throughput, or is there some trickery going on? You guys know?
I think you're getting that throughput. That seems reasonable. I'm on Comcast here, and I get 25 down and about 3 up. The interesting thing there was, you know, Comcast keeps advertising higher and higher speeds, and out of the blue, they offered to come out and at that time I was renting, and they offered to come out and give me a new DOCSIS 3 modem. And the guy who installed it, I said, you know, it's kind of out of the blue. I usually have to complain to get you guys to do something. And he goes, well, it would kind of be false advertising if we told you you could get 25 down and told you you were paying for 25, and then we didn't give you a modem that was capable of doing that. So after they installed the rental modem, I, like you, had some Best Buy gift cards, went out and picked up I happened to get a Cisco to replace, and got rid of the rental fee, and like I said, I'm pulling 25 down and 3 up, so it's a good deal.
Well, I was a little stunned by the 15 or 20 up that I was getting consistently. I was like, holy moly, this is incredible. So I was real happy, called Mike Howard. We were woohoo, woohoo. And then all of a sudden, so I started, I thought, well, let me test this out. I'm going to upload some of the podcast files to the web server, which Christian helps me out with. And let's just see if I'm really getting those kinds of speeds. So I set about 3 of them to upload, and sure enough, right in the middle of the upload, everything went down. And I was like, oh, are you kidding me? So I didn't have the problem solved at that point. I thought, oh, so I called, as soon as it was down, I called Cox. The first lady that helped me out was fantastic. Her name was Joanne. So Joanne, if you work for Cox Cable, you do tech support, you hear this podcast, you were fantastic. She called me by my name. She was really nice. She was helpful. Then she sends me, and Christian, you would have loved this guy. Okay, so she's like, okay, we're going to send you to second level support. And I'm like, oh, great, second level, a guy who probably will know something, right? So, or gal. So there's music, and she says, okay, Mr. Collison, we're going to transfer you, and there's some music. And then I hear the other end pick up, and I hear, hello? And I'm like, yeah, I was waiting for somebody to help me with, and he goes, yeah. I'm having some trouble with my, yeah, she told me. Okay, so what do you need from me, right? And this guy was just a zero. His name was Alan, and he goes, so I said, and I'm sure all you guys in chat have had this experience with the tech guy. So I said, the internet just keeps dropping on me. He goes, well, do you have any BitTorrents? It's probably the BitTorrents. I'm like, well, no, don't, no torrents that I know of. And, well, then he goes, well, then it's Dropbox. You probably have Dropbox syncing. And I'm like, okay, so what you're telling me is that I can't use Dropbox because it brings your internet it brings my internet connection down, right? Is that what you're saying? I can't use Dropbox? Well, no, but sometimes that causes, I said, look, I should be able to use all my services. And even if I, you know, well, those things flood the network sometimes. And that can cause your internet. Okay, so what you're telling me is if I flood the network, the expected behavior is that the internet goes down. Is that what you're telling me, Alan? Well, no, it should stay up. Well, okay, so why isn't it? You know, so we go through all the shut this down, shut it down, turn it up, bring it up, you know, all the things you guys have walked through. You know that nightmare experience of trying to get your internet provider. So he can see the router through the, you know, through the connection, and he goes, are you sure that that router can handle the traffic that you're sending through it? And I said, well, it's a brand new, you know, it's a 655. And then I start looking at it, and I've got all four ports full. You know, there's four network gigabit Ethernet ports on the back. Those are all full. Two are routing out to the HD home runs that I have. The other two are going to two switches that each have eight ports on them, and they're all full. And I was like, well, maybe I am sending a little too much traffic. It's quite possible I'm sending maybe that D-Link wireless router cannot handle all the traffic I'm sending. Maybe that little tiny processor that was super cheap. I mean, there's a reason these things are cheap, right? Can't handle it. So I had remembered a little box that I had been trying to set up for a while called a super router or a pfSense. We call it a super router. Everybody else calls it a pfSense router. Mike Howard's been trying to talk me into one of these for a long time, and I had all the equipment set up. I just had not gotten it all complete. So in about an hour, I set up a pfSense router. It's an Atom 525, D525, with about 4 gig of RAM on it. Never use any of that to its full capacity. And I put a 60 gig SSD drive on it just because I had one and it was laying around. And I got that up and running in about an hour. And the connection speeds have been rocking. And ever since I did that, I turned the D-Link in. Did you hear Sarah back there? See, I told her I'm podcasting. I told her I'm podcasting. It doesn't really matter, does it? So they turned the D-Link into just an access point. So that's only doing wireless now at this point. And the super router is the pfSense router is handling all the traffic. Guys, I love it. I don't know. Christian, have you ever used pfSense at all? Have you set that up?
No, I've had a friend look at it. I've looked at it with a friend before, and it does look really cool, the interface and everything. I know Mike Howard's a big fan of it, so it might be something worth looking into when we redo our network next month.
Yeah, let me bring up some of the reports. Kevin, have you used it all?
I started playing with it a little bit, and then I started experimenting with a competitive product from Astero. Their version of it, and then I just I should have did the unboxing, but I this is what I'll be deploying this weekend. It's the
should pull that back up again.
The Zixel their firewall model. Okay. 20.
Okay.
So I'm overhauling my network a little bit at a time, much like you said. I got a gigabit backbone, but my routing and other security functions were lacking. So I'm going with this for now. I'm going to keep playing around. The Astero solution, which is now called Sophos, Astero was bought by Sophos. A little more complex than the pfSense, but I'll give you an update when I get a little farther downstream with that one.
Now, how do you pronounce that?
Sophos?
So, no, the name on the brand of the...
The one I bought?
Yeah. I'm not back
sure.
Up again.
I'm not sure how you pronounce it. It's Z-Y-X-E-L.
Yeah.
Zycel?
Yeah. I have two of their switches, and I've just loved them. They were like $35. They're 8-port gigabit, and they've just been rock solid.
Yeah, they tend to do a good job. Some of the guys out in chat, Racecar Mike is a big fan of the 50 version of this, which includes a little more UTM functions. You can contract for antivirus scanning and some other features behind the scenes with it. But I'm going to give the 20 a shot here and see how it goes.
Cool. Yeah, you'll have to keep us posted on that. I brought up the dashboard for, and I was resizing the screen. You guys may not be able to read everything, but this is the dashboard for pfSense, and you got to kind of get some idea. These are some real-time stats of
kind of what's going through the router right now. The red is what I am pulling down, and the black is what is going back. And, you know, so this hangout doesn't look like I got much going on. This hangout, whatever else is going on the network, is around 500 kilobits at this point, and pulling about 1.5 on average right now. We see it spike from time to time, but it's really nice. You can kind of see, you know, about 2% of the CPU and about 4% of the memory are in use. And it's got some good little reports in here that allow me. One of the things that Mike was, you know, I was having so many problems with the internet connection. One of the reports that we looked at on this RRD graph was this quality tab, and the red down here are drop packets. Right below, you can kind of see right below the gray. And so when we first turned this thing on, there was a bunch of red on the bottom. I was dropping a bunch of packets, and we had a setting set incorrectly. And so we were on you could hear it in the audio. We kept dropping packets all the time, and so the audio was poor. We got the setting turned around and put back on, and it's been working flawless. So I'm a pfSense convert. I think this is one of these things. It gives you some great reports. There's tons of things you can do with it. We spent a little time. There are some plugins that you can add to it. One of the things I immediately did was I pointed the DNS over to OpenDNS. Haven't talked about that in a while. And you know, of course, OpenDNS is a service you can use. For me, it's supposed to speed up your internet connection by using faster DNS servers, but I like it because they have some content filtering, spam monitoring, phishing, anti-phishing capabilities through their service. I pointed it to OpenDNS and have just had been having a really good experience since I did that. So the router's been up now almost 4 days without a drop. Mm-hmm. And so I'm pretty convinced at this point that we have the problem. We have the internet speed connection dropping problem solved. And I'm pretty sure I was overwhelming my wireless router at this point. So it's, I don't know, I've never seen that before where, you know, the router just kind of gives up the ghost and it reboots and starts again. But Christian, have you seen that in any of the work that you've done with anybody in the networks?
What in particular, the pfSense?
No, where maybe a router is overwhelmed by the network traffic that's going through it.
Gosh, I mean, we have routers that just die after like 3 or 4 years, and that's when you can tell either they were overheated, overloaded, or just not really a great design. We've normally had to replace our wireless router every 2 to 3 years, and we don't run, you know, like fully load. I can tell you, though, that the switch, see, what makes more sense to do, rather than having those four ports active on the router, just throw everything into a switch and only make one line up to the router, because like I said, the switches, we've had the same gigabit switches for eons, and they just work fine. So, and we just bought a new 24 port gigabit switch for the dual gigabit cards to have the dual bandwidth over each port, so that'll be cool.
No, I agree. I tend to break things up into components. I have separate wireless access points, router set separately, switching is separate. But that's a great point, Jim, is when I started researching, you know, kind of the direction I wanted to go in, I noticed that a lot of the routers are measuring bandwidth through, and it's one of those technology shifts is we never used to worry about it because your router was always faster than the internet you had coming in the house. And, you know, part of this upgrading is, you know, I'm upgrading all this computer equipment, and what kind of got me going is the thing that was posted on the Facebook page about Microsoft's antivirus coming in, you know, last. And I started realizing that, you know, I've upgraded all this technology and I'm looking at, you know, probably a 10-year-old 3COM router, and, you know, how well is that protecting my network and how good is the bandwidth on it? So upgrading these different components. The other thing I'm thinking, and I think you'll see with pfSense, just in my own circle of, you know, people I know, people who've gone from a traditional NAT router type of technology to some type of firewall, like a pfSense or something like I've got here, they tend to see malware and other issues kind of drop off. And I just think these things do a better job of protecting you or identifying that you have something going on.
Yeah, and with pfSense, we were able to block, you know, incoming requests. They have I think 8 countries that produce like 90% of the world's spam stuff, right, or malware. So Russia, Thailand, Afghanistan, you know, just a bunch of countries. And so there's a setting in there. It's kind of a one click. You can just block everything from those countries. So we went out to a Russian language site, and it just blocked it. I figure if my kids come to me and they need access to a Russian site, I'll probably open it up for them. But for now, we're just going to lock. So I'm going to lock some of that down and see how it goes. No complaints yet with both OpenDNS or pfSense from the kids saying they can't get to a site. That was real common a couple years ago when I first started. It seems like those routers and stuff would block whatever they were trying to get to. In those days, it was Club Penguin and MySpace and some of those things. They would get blocked. Not one complaint at this point from anybody that anything's been stopped. And I do agree. I think I don't see many viruses on my system, but and we haven't had one internally for a long time, but I think that does set up a nice system for you. So for the average guy, pfSense, I had it up and running in about an hour. I have it running on some very, very inexpensive hardware. That Gigabyte board that's got that Atom 525 on it was like $70. And you can throw it in a mini case and a couple NIC cards. And you do have to have 2 NIC cards, and gigabit would be preferable. And you're kind of in a hard drive. You don't even need a really good hard drive. I mean, it anything pretty much, as long as it spins or it's SSD, would work just great. So I've been pretty excited about it. And so I want to thank Mike Howard for the work that he did with me on that. We did a bunch of testing on it. And I would very much recommend to anybody at this point, if you're at all in the space where you want to kind of monitor your traffic or you want to add some additional functionality to the data that's coming in and through, pfSense is a great way to do it, and super easy. And then there's tons of super geeky stuff that you can do with Untangled and some of those other packages that come with it. I'm not going to mess with it. I'm just going to leave it like it is, leave it up and running. It's sitting there humming along, and it's been great. So, Mike, thanks for your help on that, and appreciate that. Doing that. And Kevin, it sounds like you've got some equipment going in that we should mm-hmm. follow. Christian, any new gear in your place that from a network standpoint, have you guys enacted any upgrades yet? You were talking about that a couple weeks back.
Yeah, the 24-bit switch is one. We just bought 3 terabyte drives that were on sale for like $129, I think. So we put those in to give us some more recording space on our TV because we're at about 6 terabytes worth of recorded storage. So then we're going to offload that off of our network storage to the local drives on that HTPC. And then we're going to start rolling that server that used to do the media into a Server 2012 Essentials box, and then start rebuilding the network from the ground up.
Oh, cool. So you've got some work to do coming up here. Andrew, how are things on your end? Kids doing okay there?
Yeah, I was just had to start a feed so that we'd get a bit of silence.
I assume with the kids, Andrew, you're not getting much time to do anything at this point, right?
No, pretty much I'm keeping things running. Michelle's going through Grey's Anatomy and Spooks episodes at a rapid rate of knots, so I'm downloading more TV shows than I have in a long time.
Just trying to keep the entertainment wheels on the bus, right?
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, I mean, with respect to the problems that you're having, we don't touch wood. I've been fairly lucky. I've got a Linksys 3925 that came from the ISP, which I don't get an option to change out. So on cable here, you get a choice of that or a NIC gear. Both of them have small NAT tables, which typically tends to be the biggest issue you have with them, especially if you're downloading on torrent or whatnot. As soon as you get multiple streams going through it, the NAT tables tend to get rather upset. Torrent, I mean, on a good download for a torrent, and for example, I'll get upwards of probably 25 megabits a second. So it'll scream pretty hard, but then the router will last for about 2 or 3 minutes and reboot itself to clear its NAT tables.
Yeah. Well, I can't say that Tim's not out there. Tim's my 15-year-old using Torrent. I know he does. There's for software and stuff, he does do that. And I've told him I really don't want him doing that, but he doesn't. And I'm sure there were times when I was...
to get content.
Well, yeah, it just is what it is. I'm sure those times what was happening as he was firing some things up. I, of course, have got, for the podcast, especially when we do home server shows, well, I got a bunch of stuff going on. And I'm sure we were just overwhelming. And like I think Kevin, like you said, or maybe Christian, I may not have had my topology the way I have it set up right. I probably could have optimized it by keeping all the traffic with the switches, and then having one switch going to the router to get out, you know, or one line to go to the router to get out, and that probably would have been more efficient and kept all that traffic on the switches instead of having it go through the router all the time. You know, I'm the average guy on this. I don't spend a lot of time studying my wireless router or even know what's in there in most cases. But it did sound like we were overwhelming it. Now it only does wireless. I turned off DHCP. Yeah. It's just been fantastic. So it's been a good setup.
Yeah, pretty much all I've got attached to my router, I've got my voice over IP box. So I've got a Linksys 3102, which talks out to our VoIP provider. I've got that connected, and I've got... I've got a network attached printer, and everything else then connects into a switch.
Okay.
So I've offloaded all the serious processing off the router.
Well, I've learned a lot in this about these setups, and so do you need to go, Andrew, and take it? Okay. I've learned a ton about some network, you know, behind the scenes stuff. So it's been good to go through. To go through that process. I think you muted yourself, Andrew. Were you trying to say something? Oh, is he talking on the phone? He must be talking on the phone. Okay. One other thing, I wanted to say thanks to Jim Barton. He is a member on our Facebook page, facebook.com/group/theaverageguy. He put a post out there about using some cloud storage space and he called it hybrid cloud storage. And in a link to a post that he's kind of put together on Box, he's actually using 15 different cloud-based storages to get about 150 terabytes total of space out there, which it's a lot of maintenance to keep track of all those various cloud storage options. If you're interested in knowing what some of them are, most of those are listed in the Cloud Storage Know It Guide out on theaverageguy.tv. Just look for the blue box. I think it's blue. It says Cloud Storage on it, and we have a lot of those, although he mentioned a few that I don't have, so I'm going to have to go back through and add them into the Cloud Storage Guide. When he posted it, I was hoping what he had done is found some way to link those all together so that he had one volume and he was slicing that data up among, and I know that's too much probably to expect, but I was hoping he had one volume so to the user it would look as like one big volume, and then it was saving that data out to these various free services. Not necessarily the case on that, but it did highlight the fact that you know, to get 15 services in 150 terabytes of space for mostly free means the average provider there is at about 10 gig. And so I am seeing the average cloud offering start to creep up on those, and I just saw a new one come out. I think that one we looked at last week is 10 gig worth of free space. So some cool stuff out there. Kevin, I know you interacted with that post. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'm glad he wrote it up. But, you know, like you say, he's probably doing what we've talked about a lot of. It's just nice to see it all laid out in a process of here's where I store this, here's where I store that. One of the intriguing things that jumped out to me is, and I had kind of lost sight that Microsoft's Exchange Online is now available. You know, it was kind of a small business thing, and now it's available to users. So you're looking at $4 a month per person to have your own Exchange service, and that's something I'm going to start to look into a little bit for some folks that I know who could take advantage of that.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before, but one of the things I've been doing recently is installing that software on my Windows Home Server. So I run Windows Home Server 2011. I'm on a microserver N40L, like most of us are at this point. And what I do, like with SkyDrive and with Dropbox and with Box and with all those other ones that have a client install, PogoPlug is one of them, is I can actually install those on the server themselves and then use the home server to expose those. You know, so Dropbox creates a Dropbox folder on the Windows home server. I can put that Dropbox folder as part of all the rest of the shared file folders that are out there, and so I can access that folder, that Dropbox folder, from any PC in the house. And I don't have to have Dropbox running, contrary to what Alan thought. I don't from Cox Communications. Thank you, Alan, for your helpfulness. I don't have to have Dropbox running on every PC in the house to take advantage of it. Runs on one PC, the Windows home server. I drop those files in Dropbox, and then they go up. Then the home server takes care of moving them up to Dropbox and doing that. So I'm only syncing the file on my network in one place. That's actually a tip I got from Mike Fauché over at BYOB way back when he talked about that, I think, with SkyDrive, and I've just started applying it. So that's kind of a hybrid model that allows me to take advantage of Box and Dropbox and some of those other services. I still have individual folders, though, on my Windows home server that I access, and they're just called Dropbox and Box and, you know, whatever that are on there. It would be great if I could somehow then put something virtual on top of that. I know I'm asking for too much, but it would take advantage of all those services. But that is one way kind of getting, and then you can, through Windows Home Server, you can then have a cloud, you know, you can have a remote sign-in to your Windows Home Server and basically create your own private cloud at that point. That's one way to do it. We talked last week about PogoPlug offering the $29 unlimited. I think that ends today, so you'd have to be listening live to take advantage of that. But I know Tim took advantage of that. One of the hosts over at JPEG Dura took advantage of it, and a couple guys had posted in the group they did that. So all kinds of cheap ways. I mean, that's unlimited. So, you know, as we talk about storage, both with Crash Plan and now PogoPlug, who else am I missing who is giving away unlimited storage for a reasonable price? Who am I missing? Shout them out there in chat.
Can't think of their name.
Crash Plan. Okay, we'll wait for those to come in. I'm sure there are others that are doing that as well. Christian, are you taking advantage? I mean, what do you use for cloud stuff, and how do you use it?
Well, I'm really bad. Well, pretty badly right now using Dropbox. I was just thinking this week that I was going right. to either create a new account or get one of these. I just saw a new service that they launched that looked really, really tight. That's like Dropbox, and I don't think it's BoxNet. It was something else, but essentially, you know, 5 gigs free off the bat, which is more than I had with the Dropbox referral system anyway. I was also contemplating SkyDrive, but, you know, I don't really, if I'm not putting like my own personal documents or something on a server for me to just grab, then chances are I'm uploading it to my own virtual servers anyway and just downloading it from my FTP. So
you're not the average high schooler. You are not.
Yeah. No, I'm not.
But
if I was, I would probably choose SkyDrive or Google or something.
Yeah, you know, one of the cool things we did with SkyDrive during CES, you know, Dave took pictures on us, and you can do this with just about any phone where that SkyDrive app is available, and it automatically uploads those pictures into a pictures camera roll, and then you can share that camera roll in real time with anybody, so they can go out. You can embed that on a web page, and they can go out and look at those pictures as you're uploading it. So if you're going to go on vacation and you want to share pictures with friends, and you don't want to have to worry about all that crap out on Facebook, you can just create a page, you know, somewhere, embed that code on the page, and then give your family and friends access to the page, and they'd have access to the camera roll. I think that'd be a little better than spamming people on Facebook.
Yeah.
So not a bad idea.
That's kind of like being able to share all your, you know, if you're taking a bunch of photos on your Android phone and then just uploading them to Google Drive, or not Drive, Google Plus, and then just sending who you want to have updates for.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I like that, the fact that in the photography circles, that has become so easy now to share pictures from your phone. Really, it can be automatic to several services. I think Dropbox does it. I think Box does it. I think SkyDrive does it now. We know Google Plus does that for sure. most of them, when you install them, I think SugarSync does, when you install it, it says, do you want on your phone, it says, do you want to upload your pictures automatically? Well, you have to be careful, because you could, I've installed, because of the Know-It guide, I have installed every cloud service that I know on my Android phone, and if all of them were uploading the pictures to all the service, my phone battery would go dead, you know, every time I took a picture.
Right.
You know, so you got to be careful of that, too.
Yeah.
Okay, any other thoughts on that? One last thing, and then I'll let you guys have the show back. How's that sound? All right. So, I just want to give you an update on the Yeti. So we talked a little bit about, I had to send the Blue Yeti back to Blue for RMA. It did have some problems, and thank you, Bailey, over at Blue for getting that fixed promptly, and I have a brand new one here, so thanks, guys, for doing that. They did forget to send the shock mat back and in one email, and they said, oh, terribly sorry, and they shipped, Mike Howard actually watched me unbox that here this evening. They shipped the shock mount, so that's back as well. I am so liking this Audio-Technica, the 2100, that I'm not going to pull it out of the studio. I'm just going to leave it, and I'm going to take the Yeti on the road. And so I've rigged it up to the tripod that comes with that came with the Audio-Technica, and then I've offset the balance on this thing to make the weight fall on the center so it doesn't fall over. And the goal is just to be able to set this, and you can't see it, but the goal is to be able to set it on the table and use it as an interviewing mic, because the Yeti's got some multi-directional features on it where you can do a room sound or you can do an interview sound. There's a variety of different, or just straight on audio. And so the Yeti is going to go on the road. This is going to become my new road mic as we go out. It's USB, which makes it even better for being on the road, because I can plug that right into the laptop and start Audacity and do the recording that way. So thanks, Blue. I just want to give them some props. Great mic. I'm still going to continue to use it, and it will become the Rode mic going forward. So some good kudos out to them. And if you haven't yet, most of us bought Yetis back. A good chunk of us bought Yetis back about a year and a half ago, and they were running through the podcaster ranks. And so I just wanted to let you know I'm still using it. Okay, Kevin, 7.8 on Windows Phone. I know you. I used to bring you in. You're kind of our resident Windows Phone expert, along with Chris Lux. You said you were downloading the update today, and maybe not. It didn't go so well.
Yeah, and while we were talking here, I did it again. The update. The phone looks like it's finished, but the update seems to be stuck on 9. The phone says, "Success. Your phone has been updated."
So you have a 900,
ooh,
right?
Ooh, it worked.
Oh, show that to the screen there. So show the new tiles.
I haven't fixed it yet.
Oh, okay.
You'll notice the wash area is gone.
Uh huh.
So now I should be able to modify. Let's hit on somebody. Look at there. There's a, I don't know if you can see it, but there's a little arrow next to the icon, and I can make it a little icon.
Nice. And it'll be 4 wide when all is said and done, right?
Yep.
Yeah, just like the Windows 8, Windows Phone 8.
Or I can make them massively wide.
Yeah.
So nice. Now I can go through and start playing with my desktop. So, hey, there.
There you go.
The 900 has the 7.8 out. You saw it here. And that'll I can get to work on that later as well.
Yeah, I mine has not come. I've been checking on the Zoom, going to the update, and waiting for it to come. And I must be last in line. Maybe they're not going to roll it out for a while. So I feel a little bit like Mike Howard. He's always the last to get everything on Google, and so I'm waiting for that 9 update. Christian, what's the update on your phone? You still have you made an update?
My renewal comes June 24th, So I'm going to be, I think, I want to, Sprint announce that they're going to be carrying an HTC Windows 8 phone, so I think I might go with that.
Okay. Kevin, there's a question in chat. They're asking, is this the 900 only, or is this coming to all Lumia, right, are getting updated?
Yeah, if I read the press release properly, it's for all Lumia devices, or it should be all, anything that was a Windows 7.5 phone, I believe, will make it to 7.8.
Okay.
Some of the early 7s, I'm not sure if they'll make it, but as far as I know, any of the Lumias will get up to 7.8.
Okay. Yep, and I have a 900 too, Lumia 900, and mine hasn't come yet. So if you're listening to this and you haven't gotten it yet, they're rolling them out in some kind of semblance of some order of some kind. Not everybody's getting it at the same time. So, all right, Christian, I was distracted. Tell me again what you're going to get or what you're thinking you're going to get.
I think I'm going to get a Windows 8 phone with Sprint's going to carry a new one or two new HTC phones that are having Windows 8 right around the same time my renewal comes up. Okay. So.
Cool. All right. Christian's going Windows phone all the way. Andrew, you had put in the show notes. Are you in a position to talk about the how to build your own all-in-one PC? And maybe in just a second. He's going to try and get it. Well, maybe not. All right. Well, when he comes back, we will be back here with Andrew in just a second. Kevin, let's unbox. You got a new gift from iOSafe, and tell us a little bit about what you got. You're seriously taking this out of the box?
Yeah.
Right now.
I have my high-tech Snap-on Blade. It wasn't a gift. I bought in on the Kickstart deal they had going. So, and oddly enough, I just had called on this yesterday to see what the tracking information was, and the gentleman at iOSafe said, well, I think it just was delivered to your front door, and my wife called and said, hey, that thing you were waiting for showed up. So,
nice.
So that was good.
Nice. Now, why'd you go? Talk a little bit about why you went with this. What were you trying to achieve?
So the... I think the cloud discussion is a great idea. I just look at, I've got a lot of family videos, family pictures, and my idea with this guy is the whole idea of having something that's fireproof, you know, shockproof, waterproof. So I'm really going to use this for data that's not replaceable. And it was kind of a decision of, should I just start putting all that stuff up in the cloud, or should I go this route? And I had been thinking, hey, wouldn't it be great if iOSafe partnered up with somebody like Drobo? And within a week of that, Dave had the folks from iOSafe on to talk about their partnership with Synology. Always been a big fan of Synology, and decided to hop in and buy one.
Sweet. And so that's two great tastes that taste great together, right? So there's some Synology stuff on there. There's some iOSafe stuff on there. Is that running the Synology DSM 4.2, or is it a different version?
It'll be the latest Synology software. I'd have to look up the code on it. Okay. I think it will ship with current code. I know Dave and I had seen the latest or the newest version coming out at CES, so that was in the works as well.
Yeah, so Mike Martis is saying it's the Reese's peanut butter cup of storage.
it's very heavy. And hopefully you can see it.
Okay, so this is the one. Is that a screw on top, right? Because it isn't. Yep. There's a screw on the top and the bottom, and that face comes off, and they've got some things to allow air to go in. But as soon as a fire would start, those things would seal up and seal your hard drives in there, right?
Absolutely. And at CES, they had one that they had done their tests with that was burned and then soaked in a river for 10 days, I think it was.
Nice.
So these guys test stuff hands-on.
You never know when your NAS is going to be at the bottom of a river.
Well, they're
it could happen.
Well, it could happen. I like their logic. Their logic is a house fire gets up to could get up to about 1550 degrees, so that's what they burn at.
Yeah.
And the time frame on setting in water is the other logic is, so if this is in the upstairs of your house burns, it falls all the way down, and so it has to be shockproof. And then when it's laying in the basement, it could take a few days to get it fished out of the water. So hopefully your house never burns, but so they ship you the tool.
Yeah, that's a special proprietary hex head, right, that sets those screws in place.
Yep. External power supply on it, all the normal Synology stuff, and they used they make a big point out of the fact that they used steel screws on everything and put a lot of effort into designing the seal on the front of the unit so that you didn't have to worry about torquing four corner screws. It's just two screws on the faceplate and two screws on the seal plate. So,
can you show us the back of that thing?
Sure.
When you get it up.
I like your version of where the box had come in handy, though, Kevin. You know, the house burns down, the river runs through, and by the time you fish it out of the basement.
That's a very viable scenario. Right?
Yeah, I don't know about most of our listeners though, but if my house burned down and then the river flooded through it, the last thing I'd be worried about was my data.
Yeah, maybe so. You're probably right, Andrew. So one gigabit Ethernet port, two USB 2 back there.
USB 3s.
USB 3.
Yep. And power connection and a fan, and that's pretty much it.
Did you get a chance to hear that thing at CES? Is it pretty quiet?
It's actually pretty quiet, yeah. The noise levels are fairly low on it.
They want you to burn the box.
Well,
Chad is saying burn the box.
With the ISA in it, just proves that it's flame resistant.
Considering it was about 10 below zero here in Minnesota this morning, I could have stood starting a fire.
Yeah, it's super cold here, too, in Omaha. They don't protect the board, though, right? I mean, if that thing burns, the motherboard's going to burn in it, right? It's not going to save the equipment. Yep. It will save the drives.
It will save the drives.
And it's a two. Is it a four drive?
Two drive.
Two drive.
Yep.
You're taking the cover off of it right now. Yeah.
So this is the material. It's a harder plastic material. You can see the vent frames on the side. That's so air can get in and out. But this is a foam material that when it gets heated up, it expands, and those air slots close up. So it makes it watertight and heat resistant. That's one of the things, one of the things I run into a lot is, friends of mine who, say are hunters, they have guns, they have a gun safe, and the gun safe's fireproof, and they put their USB drives in there. And then you have to have the discussion on, just because a gun's not going to burn doesn't mean a hard drive. The non-operating temperature of a hard drive is barely above its operating temperature.
Yeah. The 800 degrees that's going to get inside that safe when the house burns down is going to screw up the drives.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this black screw right in the center here is the one screw that holds that machined plate in place that seals the drives in.
Yeah. One screw to bind them all.
That's it. One screw to hold them all. Same exact head as the faceplate.
Yep.
So that's a user serviceable drive enclosure, yeah? So you can put your own drives in it?
Yep. So, and then there's two just slide-out carriers. These guys pop out. You put the two drives in. I picked up a couple of Western Digital Reds to go in it, 3 terabytes, and my plan is to mirror those together.
Nice. Now, with the Synology software, then you're going to be able to kind of set up your own private cloud, right? That's got a lot of options. Synology has a lot of options to be able to let you do that. You can create an FTP server. You can create I think you put WordPress on the Synology.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
And that's what the drive tray looks like.
Well, that's not bad.
No. Very, very well built. Yeah. Very nicely machined.
All metal. There's no plastic melting in there.
The great attention to little things, too. Every screw in the box is designed so that it won't fall out. So on everything I've taken off, every screw is machine fit in there, so it's not going to fall off.
Yeah, that's dynamite. Very cool, Kevin. That's how long before you have that up and running, you think?
Tomorrow night, about.
You're staying up all night, aren't you?
And it's got some pretty, looking at the tech specs for it, there's some pretty cool stuff it does, like, security cam by default. I think it looks like it says you can do one, or you can do up to 8 IP cameras.
Yeah, the Synology stuff is very well done. And that's a great point. Is you don't have to buy this fireproof, waterproof guy to take advantage of the Synology products. You know, that the standard Synology stuff is quite affordable.
Yeah. What was the retail on that?
This guy, I think, retails for $599 now without drives. I picked it up for $499 on that special deal they had going on.
Okay, so $100. You know, that's the cost of the new Drobo 5. You know, the 5N is $599. Mario at the meetup leaked out that they're gonna drop some $100 coupon codes out for the 5N too.
Ooh.
At some point and bring those down to $499. I put a coupon code for the Drobo 5N for had $40 off that we saw on Amazon. That lasted for a couple days and has stopped. But yeah, so you know, you get two totally different purposes there, right? The 5N's a 5-drive RAID enclosure. It's meant to set it and forget it kind of deal. Put the drives in, it manages everything. It's got that mSATA to speed up, you know, some disk caching, SSD caching, to speed up some of the drive transfers. This is really meant to be protect your data in if there's any kind of natural catastrophe there. And so two totally different purposes.
Mm-hmm.
One question I have of the Synology product, and I know we've sort of touched on this, and maybe it's something I need to ask Dave McCabe, is how good is its bare metal restore? So the you know, like Windows Home Server, you've got your, you know, you drop your disk back in and your USB stick and boot off it and, you know, go and pick back up, you know, as of 3 days ago at midnight. You know, how good is Synology at bringing back a workstation?
Kevin?
You know, it's honestly, I've been away from Synology for a while.
Okay,
so that'll have to be a relearning from my point of view. I know they've made a lot of changes in those areas, so I'll be spending some time on that.
You know, Andrew, nobody does it better than the home server. I mean, as much as we've the much maligned Windows Home Server, that bare metal restore is still the best of that anybody's doing out there. A lot of companies are still struggling to get that done.
Yeah, because one of the awfully appealing things about Synology is, you know, it's pretty much a solid state box. You know, it does your directory services, your iTunes, your backups. It does your VPN. It does, you know, your video streaming. You name it. It pretty much does it all in one box. But if it can't restore your workstation, if your workstation dies, then, you know,
It's a NAS, right?
And that's it. Do you treat it as a NAS and offload your storage to it, or do you get a home server replacement out of it? And that's where I'm torn at the moment, because, you know, my home server's getting on 3 years old. It's got three disks in it that are permanently showing yellow in Crystal Disk Info, and, you know, because of high allocated sector counts. So do I buy myself an N54 and you know, throw Windows Home Server version 1 on it, like Zadler would, or do I you know, go for a solid state type box that's gonna maybe get all the functionality that I've got out of Home Server, and something that's probably easier to support? Because one of the things I'm finding with Home Server and Small Business Server and whatnot is, you know, you spend so much time playing with this stuff at work and supporting it when you work in the industry, that at home you just want something, you plug it in, turn it on, and not have to screw around with it to keep it going.
Right.
That's just me. I mean,
yeah.
But and from a end user perspective, I mean, the family don't care. You know, as long as they turn their PC on or turn the TV on, point the DLNA client at a source, and she can watch her TV shows or play music or whatever. And I think I don't know. I guess it's a question that a lot of people are going to ask in the, you know, in the coming little while. You know, Home Server 2011 is going away, as we know. 2003 is end of life, official support in 2015. So, you know, where do you take it from there?
Well, I think the average guy is still screwed when it comes to backup. I'll just be honest, right? So if we're talking about the average guy, nobody can get it right. They're lucky if they back up their stuff to another USB device, right? They're not spending it. They're not doing what Kevin just did and buying a, you know, they're not even close to buying a Synology. They don't even know how to spell Synology.
Yeah, exactly.
So the average user, I think, is pretty screwed. I think the average tech guy who probably listens to this show is savvy enough to be able to make that decision and go on the platform. Certainly on the Windows Home Server products, we're in a little bit of weird limbo at this point. It seems like there's a race for some of the manufacturers to fill in that spot, but many of them, while they're providing external storage, are not providing that bare metal backup solution. And for whatever reason, that is really hard to do. You know, I've heard these NAS companies talk about it. Oh, our engineers are working on it. We're coming up with our own software. Well, God, how long has a PC been around? And still nobody does it really well. Acronis is one of those that does it pretty well.
And I guess that's the question. If I'm going to put something in my mum and dad's house, they're on a 4G network connection, so they get 5 gig a month. You know, so it's not like I can connect them into a crash plan or a Carbonite or something like that. Say, you know what, send all your stuff to the cloud. So I've got to put something in there that's going to just work. For me, that's almost version 1 home server.
Windows 8 backup, right, works pretty well. And then you move those off to another drive. And then you do some trickery. you do some kind of trickery to make sure that's backed up somewhere, right? And when, because they're going to call you anyways, right? When they're not going to ever restore this thing themselves. When it goes down, they're just going to call you.
And at the moment, what they do is mum plugs in a USB hard drive into their desktop machine once every other day. But you know that drive sits next to the PC.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So if the house burns down, the PC is going to go and the drive's going to go in.
Bless you. Gotta say, very cute, Andrew, by the way. Very cute.
Very cute.
Yeah.
You know,
we're a family friendly show here. I like it. We've got seniors in high school, we have 2-month-old, 1-month-old babies. We've got it all.
Well, these guys would have been one today if they'd arrived when they were meant to be. They would have been two. They were due on the 30th of January.
Yeah, okay. What day was it? What was her birthday? It was 12-12-12. Yeah, okay.
Last sequential date of the century.
Kevin, you were going to say something?
Oh, it just, you know, and once again, it's still kind of complex for the average home user, but, you know, a friend of mine runs a small business, and what he opted for a few years ago was picking up, they do a lot of graphical media stuff, and he bought one of the Drobo Pro units, the 8 drive, and basically threw an extra gigabit Ethernet card in each workstation, set up an iSCSI LUN on the Drobo, and then they just use Acronis to make a full copy. So they just clone the workstation. Because it's iSCSI, the workstation sees that as another drive. And if they ever have to restore, they've got the boot disk from Acronis. They can just pull the image back over and restore. So iSCSI is still kind of a weird concept and scary once again for the home user. But that concept of being able to take a whole clone image of your drive, if something died with your workstation, pop a new drive in and pull it back over.
By the way, Kevin, you'd asked me to ask Mario if there was iSCSI support, and they said no, they're not planning on it at this point. What they told me is they've got another protocol on there, and I don't know what that is for network protocol. They told it to me, and I was drinking, and I forgot.
So the box supports SIFS, and they probably said NFS as well.
I think it was that.
Yeah.
And they said when you add iSCSI, they got really weird results. They tried it.
Yeah,
but they got really weird results, and it slowed the box down even worse than the old ones were, and so they just scrapped it.
Yeah, iSCSI takes you over to a block type of protocol, and it's a lot of horsepower and a lot of overhead. So I assumed it would be probably too much for it to handle.
Good question. They were pretty impressed that I asked it.
There you go.
I had two of their engineers there. I think they were engineers. They had two engineers and then three of their support guys. So it was good. I talked him into letting me do a live podcast from their support center here in Omaha at some point. And we'll get to interview. They've just opened up a new position a customer experience position. So they're working with customers that have had a great experience, and they're documenting those experiences and then posting them out on blogs for folks to say, hey, here's some different user, different types, rather than just plugging it in and like the rest of us, just using it on the network. these are customers that have used them in unique ways. And so they're going to, I'm going to go in and do a little podcast with those guys and get some behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, very good.
At Drobel. Yeah, pretty cool. All right, Andrew, you had put this link for the build your own all-in-one.
Yeah.
In the notes.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, it's a bit of an average guy project, you know, if you're after an all-in-one PC, but you don't like what's on the market. I found a thing went past me on ZDNet the other week using a Intel Loop L5 barebone system, which is built around a 21.5-inch 1080 monitor. And for around about $1,000, you end up with a all-in-one where you can pick the processor, the memory, the disk, build your own OS. Pretty cool little project.
Yeah, let me throw this screenshot up here of what this thing looks like. I think, let's see if I can find it right there. There we go.
Sort of has the potential to be your own Hackintosh as well, in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, well, interesting that in an all-in-one concept, I think we're moving more, you know, as the PC goes away, we may see people want larger screens, but we may see more and more of the PC just coming with the screen from here on out.
Right.
So, you know, that might be the next direction.
Yeah, it was one of the things we picked up at CES was monitors are getting thinner and the screens are getting nicer, and every monitor vendor we stopped at was also showing their touchscreen monitor with just a normal USB connection. So one of the things with the whole Windows 8 and touch, you know, I don't think we're that far from people, you know, upgrading their home system to Windows 8 and upgrading to a touchscreen monitor and taking that route as well.
And have it everywhere. Yeah, I mean,
yep.
You look at a lot of the notebooks that are coming out now. You know, almost everything you see hit the market at the moment's got a touchscreen in it.
Yep.
For current release, so I think it's a matter of time. And, you know, monitors. You know, you look at what an IPS monitor a couple of years ago, at least out here, was, you know, close on a couple of grand. You know, you pick up a reasonable brand IPS now for, you know, under $1,000.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things.
I mean, it's still a lot of money, but, you know, and here we go. HP staff pricing, I can pick myself up a 20-inch LED backlit IPS for under $200.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've gotten really reasonable.
Yeah.
They have.
You know, and to round out that solution, I tend to use HP and Dell have this ultra small form factor PC. They're outrageously expensive if you buy them new, but if you get them as they're coming off leases from companies, this is what I use for home theater PCs. Mm-hmm. Great form factor, but if you notice, it has a Visa bolt pattern on it. So they make adapters that you could bolt this pretty much right on the back of a monitor. So now,
so what's that got inside it, Kevin?
This one's actually an older one that's a Core Duo. The ones I tend to use are 8200s that have i5s in them.
Yep,
it's a good idea.
I've had a look at those in the past, and you know, you see them come up in the, as you say, in the merchants.
Yep.
The merchant sales and whatnot. So that'd be like an 8200 Elite small form factor.
8200 Elite USDT. And my disclaimer to everybody is, if you're going to do home theater stuff with that one, that's the one you want. All the older versions of these do not pass audio over the display port. So you got to get up to the 8200 from HP.
Okay, I just had this weird moment happen. So I've been listening to BYOB recently, and Mike Martis is out there, so he'll appreciate this. So I've been listening to BYOB, Build Your Own Box, right? And they kind of started as, like, you know, talking about parts and hardware and numbers and serial numbers, and they've moved into talking about Windows 8 and all kinds of stuff. Tonight, we've become BYOB. We are talking, all we've talked about is hardware and different parts. So a weird switch has happened in the internet sphere. We have become BYOB. Anyways, very
cool. The streams have crossed.
We've crossed the streams. Christian, did you recently make an upgrade? I know you did to your Monster desktop there, and I know you're having some issues. Did you get those all worked out at this point?
Yeah, I cleaned it out. I finally got it to work with Hibernate, so I just left it at that and stopped messing around with sleep, which I think is a byproduct of AM3 plus CPUs running on AM3 systems, but I could be wrong. I think there might be a bit of a BIOS thing that never got fully fleshed out. This is a beta BIOS, so...
If cars are tablets and trucks are PCs, and you have a monster truck, are you always going to be a monster truck guy in what you build, or do you see yourself moving in the future and going, you know, going thinner, going lighter, not trying to have as much horsepower on your PCs going forward? Is that a trend you see yourself in, or do you always see yourself trying to have the most power available to you?
Probably maybe with laptops, but definitely not with desktops. I love having all the horses out to the gate. So,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That's an interesting, I'm getting, you know, I'm kind of that middle of the road guy. I've been a Core i3 guy for a long time. The broadcast server, the studio PC, all Core i3 540s. I'm at this point, so first gen Core i3s, and they've been great for me. A little trouble when I tried to do some stuff for CES, and so I borrowed a Core i7 to make that work. But the Core i3s have been dynamite for me, so I just keep rocking those. But I don't know. There's some thought as things get into as Intel makes chips more efficient and lighter, at least on the studio end, I may need less to get more, and so they may get it may just naturally get lighter as we go forward. So I think there's maybe a whole show around that as well, so we'll let that one go. Kevin, we're running a little short on time at this point, but I do want to ask you. You had some thoughts in there about Office 2013 and Office 365. I'll be honest with you, I really don't understand that much the difference between the two for the most part. I mean, I do, but I don't. So I know you'd put some notes in there. What were your thoughts around that?
Normally I've just bought Office packages, and you know, here at home it's my wife and I, and we probably never are the bleeding edge of it, but you know, still a couple $100 if you buy legit copies. And you know, Office 365 is I'm pleasantly surprised to see it's $100 per year for 5 PCs. So, you know, money-wise, it's a pretty reasonable offer. It gets you everything. It gets you Outlook and Excel, Word, OneNote, Publisher, and PowerPoint. Plus, you get the web-based versions of those. And actually, oddly enough, I think one of the Ziff Davis websites, if you go out and just Google Office 365 versus Office 2013, they do a nice cost comparison of showing, you know, so $100 a year gets you this. If you bought the packages, it gets you this. And that kind of led me into, you know, the other post we had about, you know, that you can get Office 365 Exchange Server, you can get Office 365 Link Service, you can get Office 365 SharePoint. So, a year ago, I probably wouldn't have considered renting software, and now it might be my next step.
Mike is asking, which version of 365? Different versions. I have not paid attention to... I hear it on Windows Weekly all the time, and I just have not paid it. I tell you what I'm addicted to is just the free web apps. I mean, yeah. For me, those work just perfectly, and I have not... Now, I have Office on my work computer. I'm connected everywhere I go, and using the free web apps have, for 90% of what I do, have been fine. I just, you know.
Yep. So when I first, and to me it's still confusing, when I first looked at Office 365, it was, you know, strictly for business. If you type in Office 365 now, it takes you to a page that says for home or for business, so you can take two different paths. So it's a new offering. When you click on that one, it comes up as $99 per year, 20 gig of SkyDrive storage, 60 minutes of Skype worldwide calls, and 5 PCs
How much Skype?
60 minutes of Skype calls per month.
Okay. Oh, per month?
Per month, yep.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty stupid, though. It's voice over IP. They should just give it away for free, for God's sakes. Come on, Microsoft.
But that's Skype out, though, not Skype to Skype, isn't it?
I can make a that's Skype telephone out, right? You calling a landline, and that's free on Google Plus. I don't know why Microsoft's holding on to that call out. I think they think they're going to make money. I'll just go to Google Plus and make a phone call, for God's sakes. So, anyways, I interrupted you, Kevin.
Oh no, that's good. Good discussion. I think if you have more than three machines at home that you want Office packages on, and if you like to have the latest greatest Office packages all the time, I think the $100 a year might be a good deal. On your Facebook page, I posted a link to the 365 demos. Those are going on daily. Those are really good. They answer a lot of questions. They give you a lot of features. They show some of the integration out with mobile devices as well. So I would encourage people to have a look at that if they're curious with more about 365.
You bet. Kevin, thanks for all the posts you do out there, by the way. Facebook.com/groups/theaverageguy if you're not out there yet. Join us out there. A bunch of guys joined this week. And I hope you're enjoying the conversation. Andrew, I also interrupted you. What was your question?
It can't have been that important because I can't remember what it was.
Very nice. Christian, from an Office perspective, we're all enterprise. You're in the education space. What are you using? How are you using it? How does it get licensed? How does that work for you?
So, now you're talking about from like a school standpoint or like from our network?
Just what do you use for, if you need to use Office, how are you getting it? Are you using it? Are you using something else?
TechNet.
Okay. So you're taking advantage of your TechNet subscription. Yep. Okay. So you'd have to buy it like any other normal mortal, so to speak, and use it that way. Have you been using 2013 or are you still in 2010?
No, I'm still in 2010. The only reason I'd go to 2013 is because it can edit PDFs, and all in all, that's not like the biggest deal, I guess. So,
yeah, both Nathaniel and Mike are saying, you know, there are some EDU discounts, which we should, if you have a .edu address, so if you're going to a university, you don't have an EDU. Your school doesn't have .edu, right? That your current high school doesn't?
No, we have .org.
Yeah.
You have to be like basically a college or university to get the EDU.
If you're in the university system and you have an email that has .edu, I think you can pick it up for as cheap as $15. So there's a lot of deals out there. They want to get those college kids kind of hooked on the Microsoft products. And so you can get server. Yeah, I see you put an eBay link out there. Andrew, what's that too?
Oh, I was just wondering if that's one of the slim form factor PCs that Kevin was
talking about. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, that's one of the ones. Yeah, Kevin, if you go to the chat, if you go to the Google Plus chat, let me show this real quick.
I've just popped it in the other chat as well.
Okay.
I've got it. Yeah, that's a 7900. That's exactly the one I just held up. The only drawback on that guy is you don't get audio over DisplayPort. So you'd have to pipe audio.
On a separate HDMI card or something.
Yeah? Right. So as long as we're eBaying it, Dell 790 USFF.
790 USFF.
Is this the one right here? It's an Optiplex.
Foolish me, all of your stuff will come up as Australia. The thing I like about Dell and HP for this type of stuff is they have fantastic documentation. And Dell does so much OEM business that you will find a lot of people have these with no drive, no optical drive, no memory. So it's like a bare bones unit. And there is somebody selling these in the U.S. right now for like $120 with shipping. So if you have a small the thing you have to be careful of is you need 65-watt processors and down. So it's either i3s or i5s's, and if you have an old laptop drive, 2.5-inch drive, you can whip up a really nice home theater or small form factor box for not a lot of money.
Yeah, cool.
Very cool. Yeah, I was
check that out. Yeah.
When I put that in, I realized I was still on eBay Australia, so it doesn't switch over right away.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Very sweet. Well, we have we've gone long enough and come to the end of the podcast. We have a few more things to cover, but I think we covered most of the good stuff, guys. A nice job of packing the podcast full of some really good info tonight. I do want to thank everybody that's out in chat as well. In fact, if you're listening to the recorded version of this, we do record the podcast live every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Central, over at theaverageguy.tv live. The next 2 weeks, those will be the first 2 weeks in February of 2013. I will know. I have to remember sometimes that these podcasts have legs that grow, and sometimes people listen to them a year after we've recorded them. So I'll just say I'll be out the first 2 weeks of February of 2013. And so no live shows for the next 2 weeks. Going to take some time off. We'll give Christian some time to get some homework done and get ready for what's coming up for him here in the fall, next fall. Some exciting stuff coming from him, and so we will patiently await some news from Christian and where he's going to end up, and it will be great to do some podcasting from a dorm room somewhere in the United States, right?
You can stay here. Yes.
Right. Good enough. So we're excited about everything that's coming, but you can join us out there. And of course, if you're watching the live version of this and you are new to podcasting, I've been pushing this every week, but Stitcher is a great way to do it. If you can just listen to the audio, it is audio only, but we have all the links available for Stitcher. Basically, it just really makes it an easy way to listen to the podcast on your mobile phone. And if you're not very savvy with it, it's an easy way to get it done. Check out Stitcher.com. It's available for both iPhone and Android platforms. And do they have Stitcher for Windows Phone? Kevin, do you know?
I think they do. I'm not sure if I've downloaded it.
If they don't, try the Podcasts app that's available on Windows Phone. We covered that over at the Home Server Show last week. We had Rob Greenlee on, and we talked about that extensively. And that's an app that's free in the Windows environment, both for Windows Phone and Windows 8. You can check that out. Podcasts were available out there. That actually uses the Zune backend for all the podcasts, and we're there on Zune. So you can pull in. Just search Home Tech. And you can find us. Of course, we're on YouTube, and you can subscribe to us out there as well. And let me ask you this. If you're interested in watching video, let me know, because if you want a video on the RSS feed, Christian and I will have to talk about that, because those video files get a little bit bigger. And right now I'm trying to push all that stuff out through YouTube, but if you just have to have the video through an RSS feed, I already had one listener let me know. If I get a couple more, I'll have to up my bandwidth with my internet service provider, no, not really, with my hosting provider, and we'll have to get that figured out on how that works and get it out to you. Otherwise, you can catch it on YouTube each week. Lots of stuff coming up. I appreciate all the communication that you have with me via Twitter and email and all those other things. If you haven't listened to it, go back and listen to the Ray Ortega interview that we did just an episode before that came out just a couple days before this one on the new Home Tech interview series that we're going to put out. Some very cool stuff. And then we did a very cool podcast last night over at Home Server Show. Chris Barnes, Mike Howard, Dave McCabe. I was just there goofing around. We talked about XSplit and the different ways you can get video out on your podcast. And we spent about an hour in a hangout and lots of great material. Head over to the YouTube page for Home Server Show, youtube.com/homeservershow. There's some great stuff out there as well. And
interested on that one, you can watch me driving home,
because I joined. Yeah, that's right. Andrew is driving home and joined us in the hangout. We had all audio, or we had all video and no audio from him. Yeah. We could barely hear you, but it was kind of fun. It was kind of fun to bring in. So, guys, thanks for coming out tonight. We'll stay around for a little bit. If you're in the live stream, stay around for the post show, and we'll hang out. And I'm sure we'll talk about a few more things before we go. But it's great having you all out. Christian and Andrew and Kevin, thanks for coming out tonight. Good night, everybody. We'll see you in 3 weeks. Good night.
Good night. Have a good one.